Hi. On the 5th and 6th of June 2024, I'll be speaking at the largest AI event in Asia, Super AI in Singapore, at the iconic Marina Bay Sands. Alongside brilliant minds like Edward Snowden, Benedict Devon, and Balaji Srinivasan, I'll be on a stage exploring the extraordinary potential of AI and the profound change it represents, not just for financial markets, but also for the world as we know it. With over 5,000 attendees and over 150 side events, Singapore will become a vibrant hub for a full week from the 3rd and 9th of June. Visit superai.com to register and join me with 20% off tickets using the code REALVISION. Use the link in the description and I'll see you there. It's going to be incredible.
Welcome to Real Vision. I'm Ash Bennington. Big day today. Bitcoin crosses a new all-time high. We've got a big show to match. We're streaming live on the platform, live on YouTube. Bitcoin took out its all-time high this morning, crossing above the 69,000 threshold, now trading just shy of 65K. Ether also significant price movement on the last 30 days, trading above 3,600, nearly 3,700 on my screen right now. For people passionate about the crypto space, this is really a moment. Bitcoin had been off nearly 80% over the past 2 years, peak to trough. Some 15 months ago with the collapse of FTX, the future seemed very much uncertain. If you're watching on video, you can see over my shoulder the book that we wrote about Sam Bankman-Fried and the collapse of FTX. People in crypto were experiencing something of a major depressive episode. And outside crypto, well, in the mainstream media, crypto was having its obituary written. This is really a moment. Glad to have you with us today on this day. Glad to have an all-star panel of investors with us today. Today, I'm joined by Andrew Keys, managing partner at Dharma Capital, Ram Ahluwalia, co-founder and CEO of Lumida, and Sebastian Purcell, CIO and CEO of 1.2 Capital. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, guys, it's kind of a historic moment here that we're having. Where do we begin? Where do we start? Ram, let's start with you. Where do you think this moment ranks in Bitcoin history?
That's an extraordinary moment. Look, it's not as seminal as the Genesis block, but it's an extraordinary moment. You know, last year was the non-consensus rally where Bitcoin and Ethereum and digital assets were written off. And you went from having CYA risk for not being crypto active to, if you talked about crypto, people look at you funny. I think a lot of us probably got a lot of shit for being long digital assets. I know I certainly did. I would see people on Twitter say, follow Ram for everything but the crypto stuff. Just ignore that part. So look, last year was about get long. That's the headline. Last year was the non-consensus rally. It was the hated rally. This year is the wall of worry. And the strategy this year is stay long. That's my headline summary. Yes, there's some tactical considerations in the mix.
Sebastian, over to you. How do you characterize this moment right now?
Well, I mean, as far as I know, this is the first time we've reached back to an all-time high before the halving. I think I'm correct on that. And I think this indicates a sort of regime change in the way that the crypto space has been operating. Part of that is just more people, those of us who are in the crypto space, know the halving cycle. And so we've begun to price in our positions early on. So there's an anticipation of the expected cycle. I don't know what that means about the end of the cycle. For me, that I was just having a discussion with some of my team earlier today. And we're not certain. We don't know if this means that we're going to get a larger rally in the first portion of the cycle, or if it's going to just mean a larger top at the end. In any case, something different has happened. I think that that's the real takeaway moment. Something different has happened. Existing old models that would have predicted an all-time high, I don't know, in the summer months, like June, July, that would be more typical. Those models are wrong. They're lagging by several months. And that suggests that we've got to be a little bit more on our toes about things. But overall, quite a fantastic day, a historic one for the space.
All right, Andrew, thrilled to have you with us as well. You are truly an Ethereum OG. Look, obviously, everybody's talking about Bitcoin today, but when you look at the charts across the board, this is a very broad-based rally. Ethereum has had one hell of a year. Talk to us a little bit about how you see this from your seat, focusing through the lens of ETH.
Sure. So a wise man told me, Rom, earlier today, is on a long enough timeline, we're all dead. So, but that said, I am looking at this on a longer timeline. The first thing that I'll say is I'm going to start with the bad news. There is a great upgrade upcoming on March 13th, which introduces what's called proto-dank sharding. And the bad news for speculators is this is actually going to materially reduce the execution rewards with respect to staking. So I don't know how many people have actually modeled for this, but layer two scaling solutions like Optimism, Arbitrum, that have garnered tremendous popularity are going to have the cost of their transactions drastically reduced. I foresee this having basically a 60x reduction in cost, and I don't foresee a 60x increase in transactional volume. So stakers are actually going to have their yield reduced relatively significantly. And seeing that there is, you know, over $100 billion of staking volume right now on Ethereum, I think that is a consideration. So that's the bad news out of the way from a speculative perspective. That said, we've got the Ethereum ETF coming up. We've seen the proxy of what's gone on with Bitcoin. I think that we could see this in May, potentially August, but it's a matter of when, not a matter of if. And then lastly, we are seeing the what I think the next generation of utility at the protocol level being experimented and then implemented with what's called Eigenlayer, where we can essentially use Ethereum's proof of stake mechanism to secure middleware. And I foresee this as a potential catalyst in A, reducing supply, and B, kind of offsetting the reduction in execution rewards that I just said by essentially creating new revenue streams for proof of stake employers.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Join over 5,000 attendees for the largest AI event in Asia at Super AI Singapore, June 5th and 6th, 2024. Raoul Pal, Benedict Evans, Balaji Srinivasan, Edward Snowden, and over 150 others will join the industry's most influential to explore and unveil the next wave of transformative AI technologies. Singapore will become a vibrant AI hub for a week from June 3rd through June 9th with over 150 side events that will make for unparalleled networking opportunities. Visit www.realvision.com/superAI for 20% off tickets with the code REALVISION or click below.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, Andrew, as you point out, the only constant in this space is change. It is constantly in flux from a code base perspective, from a rules and regs perspective, legal regulatory compliance. You pointed out something important there that I wanted to open up to the group, obviously, which is the role that ETFs have had in the Bitcoin space and the perception, particularly in the ETH community, that an ETF is forthcoming for Ethereum Let's talk about that moment, because obviously we've seen some pretty significant inflows of capital into the space. Let's talk about that moment. What does this mean? Are we seeing a normalization of the digital asset ecosystem with regard to traditional finance? Ron, this is a perfect question to go to you with first.
ETFs have opened up the category to all sorts of investors that previously could not access the space. And the inflows have exceeded expectations on the high side. The inflows that are happening every day, and the process of educating the market on these assets is still ongoing. It takes time to take a product like an ETF through investment committee and say, here's why we believe, you know, we should own this. It takes a while to look at the performance. And so I think I'm excited about the ETF demand. The other part is the ETF flows are interacting with long call dynamics in the market and this kind of short dynamic in the market. It's happening in the equity markets too. And that's creating this, what we've seen, this run up, right? Shorts are getting squeezed. When you have long call activity, that creates a gamma squeeze on market makers that need to go buy spot once the option price increases to make sure they're not caught off sides. So ETF flows are like this steady fire underneath the market that's creating a powerful bid. We see that same dynamic in the equity markets too. People are shorting, you know, hedge funds have record short positions on, and you have this rotation from money markets into risk assets that is playing a similar role. The other thing I would say is that I believe most of the category in crypto is underpositioned. I think this is still a hated rally, not just without crypto, outside of the category, which is still not really aware of this. They're going to start seeing some headlines in CNBC and the Wall Street Journal soon. But I believe even within crypto is underpositioning, and that's bullish for digital assets.
Sebastian, over to you. Ram. Could I just ask a quick question to that point? So what's the delta here between Bitcoin spot, if you will, and the miners? Why is something like TeraWulf off 6% today when Bitcoin reached all-time highs?
So all the miners are trading down today, and a lot of risk assets are down today. And that's, I think, primarily because Chair Powell is speaking in front of Congress. And whenever Chair Powell words come out of his mouth, then markets freak out a little bit. So that's happened every FOMC meeting. It's a two-day testimony. I think it's a part of it. Miners, I look at as call options on Bitcoin. So if, you know, Bitcoin has like a, 3% pullback in the last hours or days. So Bitcoin miners will go down too. And look, they've been well above their trend channel. Obviously, after the halving, the revenue for the miners will get cut in half. So we should expect to see some consolidation. Winners will take share. And then losers will have to adjust. And of course, losers are already issuing equity to lower their debt burdens. And they see the halving coming. They've been building cash.
And by the way, talking about market dynamics, it's been risk off across the board this morning. NASDAQ off down nearly 1.6%, led by the Apple sell-off this morning. Sebastian, over to you. ETF flows. What are your thoughts about this moment in time?
Exactly. I was going to ask you to bring up this little chart here, which is free. Everyone can find this on Dune Analytics. This is, I think, a snapshot from yesterday, which shows roughly inflows for a Bitcoin ETF, if it's above the line, and outflows if below the line. Obviously, Grayscale is all of those purple bars down there on the bottom, which you can't be taken straightforwardly, right? Some of that is industry churn. I don't understand exactly the point of having a management fee at 5x the market rate, but that's effectively what Grayscale has. So many people who want to be in Bitcoin are rotating out of the Grayscale trust into one of the other options.
By the way, I don't think we have the chart ready, but if you look at it, one of the most interesting ones is the GBDC discount or premium has come in. I think it was at about 58% or something at the record wides, now trading at 7 basis points.
Right.
Seven basis points discount.
Right. And so that has definitely collapsed. The thing is that the actual investment vehicle is less interesting. I do think that when people take money out of GBTC, it's been this big overhang, right? Our estimate was about 20% churn, or excuse me, 20% attrition. The rest of it might be churn, right? But about 20% attrition is just people are like leaving the market. Some of those people initially just had their money locked in the trust and could finally get it out. At this point, you know, some of them might be taking profits, et cetera. But in general, these have been really record numbers by any standard. We're just shy of, you know, reaching about, what is it, 50 billion overall? So it's a lot that's going into Bitcoin. And for us at our firm, we've been really focusing on the how of this distribution, because traders who are already in the crypto space, it might already have Bitcoin and they might be operating on the Bitcoin chain, you know, doing their NFTs, you know, ordinals, all of the meme coins, everything that's happening, their bitmaps. For people who don't go into really esoteric stuff, there's tons of esoteric stuff happening on Bitcoin right now. Sort of non-arbitrary tokens, all kinds of cool things. Those people who are trading on the Bitcoin chain have been holding Bitcoin, the ETFs from the retailers. And remember, there are ads for this. I can't scroll through my phone without finding ads for these, right? And so they're everywhere. Retailers come on board. They can easily buy the ETFs. Those of us who are on chain, other traders on chain, take the gains from Bitcoin and then they cycle it into the other things that are on the Bitcoin chain. It doesn't tend to move, very interestingly. So this money may move into ETH. I've been hoping, like Andrew, I love Ethereum. I've been hoping that there's going to be more movement from the Bitcoin inflows into like some of the other chains. And I think that'll happen. But right now it looks like a lot of it is just kind of staying right on Bitcoin. And that, right. And that ecosystem is growing tremendously.
Let's ask Andrew about that, because it's a good point. First, I should say the discount on GBTC looked like the wide was at minus 48%, 48% discount now, discount of about 7 basis points. Andrew, to pick up on Sebastian's excellent points there, you said perhaps the most important words in terms of forward price action so far in this show, when you were referring to the ETF for ETH, when you said when, not if. Let me ask you this question, Andrew. What gives you that level of optimism that an ETH ETF is coming?
I think we've got all of the canaries in the coal mine with respect to a futures product that is needed for surveillance. That was one of the first road bumps when the SEC was giving feedback. We've got all of the same issuers for the Bitcoin ETF are re-upping in this regard. We've got litigation ready as an industry if needed. And frankly, we're going into an election cycle. There was no coincidence that after the XRP case, we saw Biden polling with the laser eyes. You saw that cup of coffee that Biden, he literally had coffee mugs with the laser eyes. And that to me was kind of the concert. It was in concert with kind of the road to the Bitcoin approval. And we're going to see politicians do what they do best and juice the economy into a Goldilocks November because they want, you know, we as a society have amnesia pretty quickly. And I think that we're going to see lower rates. We're going to see things like the Ether ETF approved. We're going to see debt forgiveness. And we're going to see that right into the election.
Did you say debt forgiveness?
Yeah. I mean, you heard the student loan debt forgiveness loans, that's going on?
Yeah. Crazy.
You think it gets done?
Oh, for sure.
And does it stand?
We'll see. I don't want to opine on, you know, political punditry. You know, the Republicans could block it, but that is absolutely the intent.
One point I want to raise is the ETHE ETF. I still get an 8% discount. That was one of the trades we were very vocal about last year. It's kind of a form of double alpha because the discount to NAV closes and you get the benefit from the appreciation of spot ETH. That's up today as well. And it's also notable that Bitcoin and Ethereum has added diversification. I've looked at my P&L every day, and I'm looking at days when banks have issues or tech stocks are down, and what you've seen is digital assets have been up. So that bolsters the case for investment managers to identify a role in the portfolio for digital assets. And I agree with what Andrew said. Like, you have fiscal deficits at wartime levels. You got spending on CHIPS Act that's still being rolled out, IRA Act. It's an election year. You know, Fed is likely to maintain their posture and bias towards cutting, even though that's been kicked out. You know, the bear case is that you have an inflation surprise, but I don't see them raising rates. I don't think they can do that. They already adjusted their posture in December. The market got ahead of that by saying, oh, they're going to cut in March. They never said that. But adjusting the posture of the Federal Reserve is like changing an aircraft battle group in the ocean. They're not going to just turn around and say, hey, we got that wrong. They're very deliberate about that.
And I think that you play this well for non-crypto native folk in the Ether trust, because I, as a someone crypto native, always think of the opportunity cost of the staking yield. And basically that discount window can actually outperforms holding spot and staking it. You know, the 3.5% yield currently right now.
So Ram, so you alluded to this idea of non-correlated returns, asset diversification in the space, include improving Sharpe ratios. Is this something that you see folks out there thinking about who are not crypto natives?
It's hard to know what others are thinking about. I certainly see it. I'm sure other people in the market see it also. You know, it happened again yesterday when you had tech stocks were down and Bitcoin was up. It's happened multiple times. It happened during the banking crisis. I think folks can remember that period in time too, when you had digital assets rally when banks were declining. It's very interesting. The correlations of Bitcoin and ETH, partially they're related to the dollar. If the dollar's down, that supports digital assets. Partially they're correlated to tech. Partially they're, meaning tech goes up and these assets go up. Partially they're negatively correlated to the banking system. It really is a unique type of asset that you can have in your portfolio. And then you look around the world, you still see inflation run amok in other countries, and you see people looking to digital assets as a way to protect their families and escape from regimes that would want to control them by controlling their money. I think the role of this in the portfolio is going to start taking more and more attention. It's already part of the CFA curriculum, by the way. Digital assets has a section in the CFA curriculum. So like the intellectual battle is being chipped away, and you've got Larry Fink, the largest asset manager in the world, who's legitimated the asset class. I mean, that's a big deal. You can't understate that. And you're getting sovereign wealth funds that'll start to explore this. So yeah, look, I think, you know, the supply is obviously constrained. Why is Coinbase going down? why is that going down? Because they can't find enough Bitcoin. They can't find enough Ethereum. So I think that's constructive. To Andrew's point, I think Eigenlayer is a highly understated opportunity in Ethereum. The ability to create restaking and structural leverage in the system should be a significant accelerator for Ethereum.
And to jump in and explain a little bit about Eigenlayer for folks who may not have a solid grasp on the technology.
So simply put, there are thousands of what I would just simply put as middleware activities that one could do. The seminal use case right now is data availability. And rather than any of these middlewares creating their own token, and that token maybe having, let's call it on the low end, you know, a couple $1 million market cap to $1 billion market cap, Eigenlayer enables the use of Ether and the Ethereum proof of stake network as the security function. So we can actually lend security to any of these middleware tools. And with this middleware tool, you will earn yield in Ether. And basically, rather than having to have 1,000 middlewares, each with their own token with a smaller market cap that has much less security, you're now able to use this much larger pool. So ostensibly, each one of these middlewares have a $100 billion security moat rather than their $100 million security moat.
So what it's doing really is just building up that technology stack in a way that enables middleware functionality and doing things that really have practical value in the ecosystem. And I guess the advantage here, I mean, for folks who have a couple gray hairs and have a little bit of traditional finance backgrounds, what you hear in this, you go, oh God, 2008, rehypothecation of assets. But I guess the value of this is that when you have this on a blockchain, you don't have those types of lack of transparency where you don't know who's holding what risk. You can net things out. You can do it in a way that's programmatic. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it. In the typical rehypothecation, we don't know where the assets go. Right. In this, one has to opt in. And so there is structural leverage, but it's structural leverage that's mitigated per middleware functionality. So you can't rehypothecate it infinitely without your ability to be called for a slashing event per instance. So I think that there could be, and a lot of people are saying there should be our next blow up in these ecosystems from something like this. And frankly, there is that chance. But I think it's technically not a rehypothecation. And I think the risk is mitigated much better.
I would say it's a great explanation, Andrew Weigand, there. And I think I agree, it is structural leverage. That's bullish. And some people will look at this and say, oh, okay, look, that's going to end the ecosystem. Leverage helped boost digital asset prices through these non-bank shadow lending and DeFi in the last cycle up until it blew up the ecosystem. Right. So it's important to keep that in mind. There's a good framework called the Minsky framework, where there are three phases. And phase one is when you're underwrite to cash flow to get to your return objective. You make a decision on investment based on the cash flow. Phase two is you need leverage to get to your return target. And then phase three is pure speculation. That's when you're betting on, you know, the foolishness of others to buy your assets at a future price. So I think Eigenlayer and structural leverage, and I believe there will be a renaissance in DeFi as well, because DeFi works. DeFi is another primitive that works in stablecoins, which has product market fit, right? Is ushering in phase two of this Minsky hypothesis. That's bullish. It's bullish, even though it adds leverage. I know leverage is a bad word, but fundamentally what that means for asset prices is constructive.
Sebastian Purcell, a little light conversation about the Eigenlayer and Hyman Minsky this afternoon. Let me ask you this. I mean, we obviously leverage can have catastrophic effects, but stupid leverage is very different than rational leverage. And leverage particularly, I mean, look, you want to buy a house, you want to take a student loan, it's leverage, right? I mean, we don't want to sort of vilify it because there are cases where people lever up 30-1 and wind up getting washed out. Sebastian, how do you think about some of these issues?
Well, my real sense about Eigenlayer is that there's a transformation that's happening. And the leverage question is an interesting question. I don't think that we're in the phase of the market cycle that we have to worry too much about that yet. I'm less concerned at the moment about that. What I see is that there's a change in the narrative of what's happening. Last market cycle, there was a sort of a competition among all the L1s to see who can get the most market share, who can outcompete, you know, Ethereum before Ethereum finally upgrades to like whatever fast enough transactions per second, and Solana is going to get that, or AVAX, or God knows what else, right? That was last cycle. This time, what we get with Eigenlayer and a few other modularity cases is a sort of cooperative as opposed to an adversarial environment, wherein it is possible to bring in the larger L1s and coordinate them so that users, and that's what users want too, is they want to be able to move from one place to another in a coordinated and simple way. So this, it turns that previous cycle's adversarial campaign into something much more cooperative. Because, you know, even Near, for example, which last cycle was built as like the fastest L1, they also have a DA layer, right? They can function that way. And that's the modularity narrative. And I think the modularity narrative forces people to refocus their assessment of L1s, right? And that does mean that once we eventually get some more flows onto ETH because of maybe ETFs or whatever else, that will help the rest of the space.
So, Sebastian, what does that mean when you say refocus their view of what's happening on L1s? Explain that.
Well, I just mean that, like, so before the idea was that, okay, we have all these L1s, and I don't remember how we tracked at one point, like 31 L1s. And the idea was they're going to consolidate down, like, I don't know, cell phone carriers, right? We're going to get 3 to 5, and that's it. And the rest of them are going to go under. At this point, we don't need that. A bunch of them can effectively move on as kind of L2s on ETH, effectively, with using modularity, other kinds of data availability layers, and they can become integrated. It is one of our theses is that ETH is going to gobble up a lot of these other former competitors. It looks like it's already happening, and they're going to be able to use technology stacks like EigenLayer in order to do that.
Let's throw that over to Andrew. That sounds quite bullish for ETH.
I'd agree. And furthermore, I think that we're actually seeing the traditional, let's call it Web2 best in breed user experience engineers migrating to the system and focusing on account abstraction. So all of this stuff is low layer, nerdy, back office yield generation. The user of a decentralized application shouldn't and doesn't care about any of this. And they want to use Uber or decentralized Uber and it just to work. And with the account abstraction functionality coupled with my first and foremost bad news, this protodank sharding that reduces transactions to 60x less on layer twos, we should be able to have a seamless user experience going forward. So to your point, Sebastian, we should have cheaper and better user experience. And that's what I'm looking forward to from kind of a fundamentals and actual technology and less speculative nature going forward.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes our cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help get your pet the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Well, as we talk about improving the user experience to Web2 layers, I got kicked out of Facebook this morning. Massive outage, I guess. I don't know if anyone else did. Hey, listen, let me ask you this, Andrew. Can you unpack a little bit more granularly about what's going to happen with proto-dank sharding? You mentioned this bit of fee compression that we're going to see. What is it likely to happen in the short term with that, and how does that resolve in the intermediate to longer term?
Sure. So essentially, we are consolidating transactions. And the simplest analogy that I can use is that if the four of us went to a bar and I opened up a tab and I bought us each a round of drinks, each a round of hamburgers, each a round of desserts, and another round of drinks, and then closed the tab, the entire tab is going to be condensed in what oddly the industry is calling blobs. And basically we are going to batch those transactions, all those microtransactions each round. So when we started the tab, we started with a zero. And when we end the purchasing the food at the bar, we have a $100 tab, but we went from $10 to $20 to $30 to $50 to $100 with each of those rounds of food or drink. And basically, we're going to be able to consolidate each of those microtransactions into a blob of data. And that blob of data is going to cost 60x less. So the introduction of this data structure, where we can basically parse disparate transactions and batch them, is the new upgraded technology.
And is this something, Andrew, that's going to be optional for small transactions? Clearly, there's a reason why one would, you know, for example, in the US, we have two main payment systems here, interbank, ACH and Fedwire, one which transacts net and one which transacts gross. Maybe for a bar tab, by the way, good luck getting a bar tab below $100 in New York or Puerto Rico these days.
Fair enough.
If you're doing this for a lower value transaction, obviously you want to compress that to the smallest fee possible. But if you're doing something like on chain, like selling a high value asset, you don't want them batched up because you want to be able to get transaction finality. Talk a little bit about how the technology is going to address that.
So you're not going to know as the user. Basically, this is just the batching of the transactions, kind of like how you have multiple transactions currently in a mempool. And it's not going to be a user experience where you're opting in or opting out of it. It's just the way the L2s are going to work, that they're going to just batch disparate transactions. And so it's not going to be
L2s,
something that,
this is at the L2 layer.
Correct.
So if you're transacting on the base layer, the L1 chain, you don't you can get transaction finality with the same level of confidence and speed.
Correct.
One comment I think to focus on is like the tactical considerations, if you want to go there, Ash.
Yeah.
So the one is, I would say, look, markets are overbought. So risk reward tactically versus end of year outlook are different questions. You see in the equity markets, like 4 PEs 21, you can see in the high yield market where credit spreads are very tight, investment grade as well. You know, in crypto, you know, Pepe token is up like 700%, I think, in a month or something, right? That's the equivalent of high yield tightening, by the way. We call it Pepe token, right?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, NFT artwork is appreciating price quickly. We're not at the Beeple levels yet. And there's a lot of celebratory commentary on Twitter. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to celebrate. It's that kind of joy from within. You're like, yeah, we did it, right? It's that pride. But I would say like that from a sentiment perspective, that is a bit high right now. And, you know, that will get a breather at some point. I think that the breathers generally will be shallow though, because people are underpositioned for this rally. And I think overall people are offsides. And we go back to the factors that Andrew and Sebastian outlined above, especially the Ethereum, you know, ETF, and then
offsides in what sense?
I think folks just like this rally just went too far, too fast, too quickly. By the way, same thing, equity markets and crypto, this cross asset class perspective, can you see similar dynamics, right? You had a relatively short bear market from February 21 in the equity market, starting, call it early December, crypto markets ending October 22. It's like 6 months and change. Then 15 months, you're back to all-time highs. And to Sebastian's point, we're ahead of the halving cycle. So we're on this accelerated time frame. Overall, I view that as bullish. What does that acceleration mean? I think there's a lot of money that was scared out of risk assets in last year due to the telegraphed recession that never arrived. They're trying to find a home back into risk assets. So when they look at, say, Mag 7 stocks, they're looking around and say, gee, these are all expensive. I'm going to stick with the leader NVIDIA because they're actually growing earnings at the same rate as multiple. And they're avoiding these other names like Microsoft, Apple, and Tesla. And they're looking down the other categories like biotech and small cap. And then in crypto, you know, Bitcoin has the ETF flows. So Bitcoin is going to keep doing what Bitcoin does. Ethereum is going to benefit because of the anticipation of that. But I do believe you're going to see new money, you know, to your point, Sebastian, rotate out and say, okay, degen behavior is coming. It's already here, actually. It's already here.
So it's here.
It's already here. 700% Pepe token. Come on.
I think it was only about 310%. Sorry, I traded Pepe token. Like, we did that, right? So it's about 310% according to
the number. Okay.
It's like a confessional, confessing your sins. You know, I traded Pepe token.
It's like a support group.
Right. Look, I mean, you know, so.
And the fuel on the fire there is that the transaction costs are going to go to nothing, you know, at least in the L2 Ethereum.
And the L2 space.
So,
right.
Yeah.
And if I could
sorry to interrupt that.
Yeah. I don't know, Rob, if I can add a point there about the sort of the cooperative nature that we see of things. What's actually happening, and I think you'll like this too, Andrew, if you didn't know about it, but we've been spending a lot of time thinking about Bitcoin, right? Because of the ETFs and the how of flows. So what you're actually getting on Bitcoin is new protocols like Multibit that are, so they're introducing like 404s, ERC-404s that do native fractionalization for NFTs onto Bitcoin for their NFTs, right? But in order to do that, they're offloading a lot of that work onto ETH because you need a smart contract layer in order to do fractionalization, right? And Bitcoin doesn't have that. So how do you do it? Well, they're offloading that onto ETH, right? And this is part of the way in which you're even getting the difference between BTC and ETH is eroding over time for exactly these sorts of reasons, right? ETH has a use case that hasn't generally been recognized. That's its smart contracts are safe, right? It's been around the longest for this, et cetera. So people are rotating onto that. And the other, I guess there's another little question about tactical support. I agree with you, Ron. Like, yeah, this looks like the trader in me says like, oh, it went up so fast. There has to be a pullback. One of the more interesting things, though, is where the exchanges are happening. Those of us who are native are not, you know, on chain, right? We have a different view than most retailers right now. There's a chart that I had on like a USD supports centralized exchange volume. So this is, you know, all of the money that's coming in from US dollars. If you're not going to buy an ETF, you're going to onboard into a centralized exchange using US dollars. This keeps Binance out of the market, which has lost significant market share globally. But we're just kind of excluding that in this chart. What you see is that most of that money is moving into Coinbase, right? Over time, it's really Coinbase that's gaining. And that is-
Sebastian, explain exactly what this is measuring.
So each one of those that you see there, FTX is up there for old time's sake, I guess, or just like if you want to flashbacks. But so each one of those, it's the bar chart expresses the percent of volume that's happening on those exchanges. So Coinbase is in the pink. The 12 others is the blue at the top. Crypto.com is that teal one. Kraken is purple. At this point, the further you go to the right, those are the more recent months. Obviously, the most recent month, we don't have much data yet. That's why it's very small. But
so that does not represent shrinkage. That's just, you know, we're March 5 here.
We're March 5, right? Yeah, exactly. Even that is sort of instructive. The only color you can see there is Coinbase. Right, so where the US dollar transactions are going is onto Coinbase, despite all of the problems that they're having right now with, you know, people trying to get their swaps in or whatever, just buying and selling and doing things.
That's a frictional, we would hope issue.
Right, yeah. It's just, that's where the money is going. And what that means is that, Coinbase has a blockchain base. Right, it doesn't have a coin associated with it, but it does have a blockchain, and that does mean that they will incentivize people to use their blockchain, even if they don't incentivize, even if there's no coin, and that means probably that money is going to flow onto the base L2, right? So, like, again, this is how we take our view of things. We're trying to look at the how of flows, but that suggests right now the US dollars are flowing into Coinbase, most likely flow onto the Base blockchain, and projects supported there will receive a lot of capital, which is broadly bullish. Other things remaining equal, broadly bullish for whatever those projects are. And if you want to talk about meme coins, there's a Brian Armstrong meme coin on Base, which that one did do 11x over the last month. So just to kind of put in perspective the craziness of this all, I think that it's a sort of an anecdotal measure, but it's a measure of how capital is flowing into these spaces, right?
So not to be as degenerate, I'm not as cool and degenerate, a little bit more conservative on the meme coin mania. But I would express this Base point that Sebastian eloquently made. Base is an EVM fork of optimism, right? And I think that like many of what I think optimism has done well. So Andreessen led their Series A. Is they created essentially a toolbox for companies like Coinbase to be able to fork it. But if you get into how it works, 15% of the fees that one of these forks can generate will be paid back to Optimism. So I think that a great expression, it's not gonna 11x like the Brian Armstrong meme coin, in my opinion, but I think a good way to look at this, if you're looking further down the risk curve than, let's call it, the majors of Ether Bitcoin, are places like Optimism, where they are going to benefit from proto-dank sharding being reduced in fees, and they're going to benefit from having this strategic direction where companies like Coinbase can make an optimistic roll-up L2 using their tooling and then generate revenue back.
I want to create something in my life with a 15% perpetual royalty.
Yeah,
life goal of mine.
No kidding.
One interesting topic might be, like, how do you get back in the market if you're not on the market? This is a great chart I'll share. And what you can use this as a mechanical rules-based framework to make decisions to take emotion out of the equation, right? So the dark green indicates strong uptrend, and the dark red is downtrend. So eventually we will see.
How's that measured? How's that measured, Ram? What's the metric that's used to baseline these colors?
They have a methodology they publish on their site. It's inspired by moving averages and learnings from, like, the FX market, right? And they look at these technical indicators to publish this chart to indicate the trend of the asset. So I like this chart a lot because it's not subjective. You can look at it, and eventually there will be a pullback. And if you want a rules-based approach to get long, you might say, hey, look, I'm going to wait for another yellow zone to show up at some point. You know, that'll happen. I think the other part worth sharing is that psychology matters a lot when you deal with highly volatile assets. So you have to make sure you've got the appropriate income either in your job or in other assets you own, so that you have enough distance, emotional distance from the asset, to make a good decision. Otherwise, you're going to make bad decisions. You're going to get in an argument with yourself or your spouse, and that won't lead to good outcomes. And avoid leverage, because you don't need the leverage. Just make a handful of good decisions throughout the year when risk reward is attractive, and you'll do okay. Do more than okay.
Yeah. I mean, not to sort of contradict what we were talking about earlier, but to your point, leverage in a highly volatile asset class is often poison to retail investors. Just to state the obvious.
Agreed. One last thing while I've got the screen share up here. So here's some of the kind of market tells I look at. Can you see that screen? It shows my watch list. I call these, like, market tell. So these are sampled across different asset classes. So I'll pick out a few. Like, one is look for the leaders and how the leaders are performing. So the leaders in Mag 7 are Microsoft and NVIDIA. Are they breaking trend line? Right now they're not. NVIDIA is still delivering. So keep an eye on those. Another one is like Carvana. It's a battleground stock where you've got that dynamic I mentioned where you've got short covering and aggressive call buying. Like the put call skews at record levels. There's tremendous demand for call options. And look at SMCI. This is where speculation is taking place. Mm-hmm. So when those animal spirits retreat, they break down below, say, their 50-day, 20-day, 200-day, that's when you want to be cautious. Obviously, you're seeing the miners experience some of that pullback today. But anyway, those are some tools that might give you, you know, some basic avionics to navigate.
Guys, I want to touch on... Go ahead.
No, so just obviously open into a whole set of other metrics too, but those are other ways to triangulate, you know, around the market.
Mm-hmm. Ron, we'll have you on for a deep dive, walk through all those metrics shortly. Listen, I want to touch on something else here, and Sebastian as well, of course. I want to touch on something else here that we've, each of us in our own way, touched on during this conversation, which is this idea. I mean, you hear the old distinction of the on-chain world, the off-chain world, folks who are crypto native, folks who are not crypto native. To what extent is that breaking down right now with the ETF? And to what extent is that maybe something of a head fake? Do we see this as being a period where we're going to finally see integration of, or at least the beginning of integration of the digital asset world and the traditional finance world? Or is this a head fake and we're still some way off? Guys, what do you think?
I don't think the ETF is really representative of retail going quote unquote on chain by any means. I think that this is the simplest way to access this asset class. And frankly, it's completely diametrically opposite from that, where you have a stock with a CUSIP rather than a public private key pairing that you have to worry about. So I think that this is a great way for retail, the 65-year-old dentist, to have exposure without holding those public-private key pairs.
Yeah, I agree with you, Andrew. I see this as, if anything, we're getting the lines are harder at the moment than they have been, because now people have no incentive to make the bridge over. Among people who followed me last cycle, one guy was an 80-year-old who found his way onto my Discord channel and all of those things way back then. And, you know, I had some of my team members like help him walk him through the steps of getting on chain. I don't think that's happening right now. I think that now, because it's so easy to buy a BTC ETF, right? You already have that established in, say, a retirement account or whatever. You just do that. And if anything, it's eroded the incentive that some people had to get on chain. And more people can now access at least Bitcoin or ETH, depending. But those of us who are crypto native, yes, there's a big advantage to be had. I will say, like, if you really want the advantage, now it's very easy. But fewer of those people are making the cross, I find.
Ron, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. Retail. Well, mixed thoughts here, actually, I would say. Number one, ETFs are buying access to the RIAs. RIAs often act like retail, by the way, even though they're professionals. They fall in love with memes and stories and narratives. Memes meaning like the concept. So that's one. But retail got back in. You know that from Coinbase and Robinhood earnings in Q4. So retail is here. So more retail to come. I think we're still experiencing the next wave where people start texting each other and say, how do I get into this class? That hasn't quite happened yet. It's starting to happen. I think there's an interesting question on like which subsectors within digital assets will have the best return opportunities from here and to year end. And I do think like altcoin season is already here and you're going to see continued movement in that category.
Well, Ron, we've got a question about exactly that from one of our viewers I'm going to get to in a second. I'll weigh in on this one as well and make it unanimous. I think it's going to be a long, slow twilight march. I think that's an interesting point you made there, Sebastian. I think that the speculation, for example, or even the desire to own for the long term in an ETF is very different than being on chain. I think we're still extremely early, and I think it's a very, very long march to get the technology to the level of adoption that folks in the space someday dream of. Here's the question. If BlackRock's application for a spot ETF is not approved, how will the market react? And this is from Aram. Aram adds, especially Solana. Any thoughts on any of that? What happens if BlackRock's ETF is rejected for ETH? And what specifically would happen to Solana, or Solana more generally, in your view, guys?
So BlackRock is, I believe, 583-1 wins versus losses in their ETF applications. And I don't think that these applications are made without knowing that they are going, it's a game that they, I believe, think that they've already won. But to the question, if it is not approved, I think you will have a market sell-off. For all of the fundamental reasons we've discussed already, we've seen the watershed liquidity entering the space through RIAs on a regulated exchange into regulated products.
Andrew, while we're on this, I'm curious, what's your view on Solana, and what's the view of the Ethereum community about Solana?
Yeah, I think that Solana is interesting technology. I think that we as an industry haven't determined the trilemma of scalability, privacy, confidentiality, and throughput. So basically we have, it's scalability, throughput, and security. And essentially Solana made different trade-offs and basically optimize for speed at risk of decentralization, where Ethereum optimized for decentralization at the initial expense for speed. And the markets will bear which one wins. And I think with account abstraction, you should all potentially converge and interact with each other.
Yeah, account abstraction, another really important concept coming down the pike. Sebastian, Ram, thoughts on this question about the ETF or Solana?
Yeah, I mean, really quickly on the ETF, I don't know, Ram, or if you would be different, but if it got rejected, yeah, there's a temporary pull down. I've been trying to make the case that there's a convergence now with all of these data availability layers, the way that, you know, Bitcoin, in order to get some sort of smart contract functionality on there, is pulling on ETH. So even if we just have people onboarding into Bitcoin, right, that still helps ETH in a way that I think the market hasn't appreciated. In terms of Solana, I'm looking forward to some more cooperative integration between the EVM ecosystem and Sol, right? We like Sol, we like it a lot. I've been following the meme coins because I want to understand how that little economy works. That economy is most alive on Solana because it is so fast and so cheap. And by most alive, I mean, literally every minute of every given day, go to DexScan, you will find new meme coins being launched on Solana. Most of them die almost instantly, okay? But there is no other place where you get that level of production except Solana. And it's the way that their system works that it can do that in a way that you could never do on ETH. AVAX was trying to promote that with a $100 million campaign to bring meme coins onto Avalanche. Who knows if that'll happen, but that exists on Sol for a specific reason, given the economics of Sol.
Dare I say, could never do on ETH layer one, but certainly could.
On a layer two, after proto-dank sharding, looks far more positive, for sure. I'd say that. Yeah.
Ram, thoughts on what happens? Two questions there. What happens in the event that the ETH ETF is declined? And also thoughts more generally on Solana.
Well, I agree. Look, in November 21, when Gensler denied the Bitcoin ETF, that, among other factors, set us into a bear market. We also had a bullions at that level, too. You just had a country adopt Bitcoin. So you couldn't get more excitement at that period in time. But that would also be a gift, but it depends on the political dynamics, right? So Chair Gensler, I don't expect will be the chair in the next 12 months or so. I think there is this kind of Trump bump effect, both in equities and in crypto. You can see it. There's a crypto token called Trump. It's also up like like, you know the number, Sebastian. It's up a,
yeah,
it's up
quarter billion, I think, something like that.
So if an Ethereum ETF were to be denied and the polls are in Trump's favor, then, you know, there's an opportunity there. Although there are questions around how accurate are these polls. So it's a, you really have to reassess at that point in time, right? There's some legitimate questions on the accuracy of the polls when Republicans are polling very well, but then losing races in some key markets. So there's a, that's got to be teased out. I think it could be a gift though, right? Like last year, people were complaining that ETH wasn't keeping up with their eye. We were like, this is great. Just buy. Take advantage of that. I'm in no rush for an Ethereum ETF. That's a gift. If you're a net new investor, if you're putting money away and accumulating, you want low prices. Take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
Interesting point. All right. Next question comes from Daryl. Is there a possibility that due to the ETFs in the space that some coin segments or seasons get skipped over and only the popular coins get play? Boy, this is an interesting question. The question is really about whether or not ETFs change the dynamic of the market. Sebastian, you were just talking to this point.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think they do. There's a worry in one way that the altcoin season will be different. Right? We have to start differentiating among the altcoins there. And certainly fewer narratives are getting attraction in the way that they used to, right? So people, DeFi on its own isn't a narrative that has traction right now. People talk about RWAs, that sort of does. Chainlink had a bump recently, right? But, you know, AI is, that's taking cues mostly from the traditional market. DPIN, you would hope that that's a narrative that takes hold. But yeah, I would say that we are skipping right over from a Bitcoin rush. The market got really greedy, and then just a few days ago, we got the huge, ridiculous surge of meme coins, which is why we're talking about them at all. Because if you're looking at the space, like, what in the world? All of these stupid meme coins. I'm a professor, so I have former students, and one of them reached out to me and asked, what is going on with Doge? And my reply was, I've never really understood what's going on with Doge, but up, because all meme coins are up. So I do think that there was this perceived, we've seen the charts, I wish I had prepared this one for this slide. So we've seen the charts of, first it's Bitcoin, then it's Ethereum, then it moves into these altcoins in a specific way. And finally, at the farthest out risk curve, we get meme coins. But what I think we're getting is people are just jumping a bunch of intermediate steps, and they're going, when they get greedy, they just go straight into these super high beta options.
The only thing I know for certain about Doge is that my girlfriend's making fun of me because she made a lot of money and I didn't. listen, guys, we got one more question here, and it's a good one. Before we run out of time, this one comes from Paul. What's next for Bitcoin after the reversal from ATH today? By the way, if you're new to the space, welcome to crypto. Things move so fast. We were just down under 65,000 on Bitcoin. Now we're up to about 65,500. What's next for Bitcoin, guys?
I think it's a fake out breakout. This kind of pattern happens near all-time highs. It's meant to shake out new longs. You're seeing some liquidations. It'll pull back. That'll create some fear in the market, and that can create an opportunity as well. You know, we had some excess ebullience that took place. We had some euphoria, and that's going to get worked out.
On our long enough timeline, we're all dead. With that said, I do think we did cross 50 billion in ETF market cap, and gold ETFs are around 100. I think within 24 months, the Bitcoin ETFs will outweigh market cap of gold ETFs.
That's amazing. Incredible.
Wow, that's a bullish prediction.
Yeah. Buy the dip.
But yeah, that's exactly the idea. Is a very tactical one. Like, if you're new to this stuff or whatever, yeah, just ladder in your, just put limit orders, ladder them lower, expect the dip. Like, that's the way to trade this. That's what I would be looking at least, is there's a lot of volatility right now. There's likely to be some short term, like just insanity intraday. If you have some standing limit orders, you might get some really cheap stuff. That's what I would be looking at this space, because long term, it looks like it's bullish. It's pretty bullish.
Yeah. And I guess you might also get stopped out on the downside.
There's also that. Yeah.
Guys, let's go around the horn. Final thoughts, key takeaways on this historic day. Let's reverse the order. Andrew, first to you.
This is a technology first, and we have not even witnessed the user experience and demonstration of the actual technology rather than an asset class. And once we actually use applications of decentralized technology, I think that we have exponentially farther to go.
Sebastian, over to you. Final thoughts, key takeaways.
Key takeaways. I mean, it was a surprise. I think those of us who are professionals, you know, we were surprised, not in the like, oh no, I wasn't invested, but is in the like, wow, that went up a whole lot faster than I thought it would, sooner than I thought it would. And oh, that's good. It also means that people are, again, I think they're anticipating the previous cycle. The things that we saw before are being anticipated faster. And that does mean that, you know, waiting around for the halvening and then several months afterwards, and then we finally get a bull run, that narrative looks like that's probably wrong. I think that's what we just saw, that narrative, that consensus view is wrong, that things are moving much faster than people anticipated. And so if you are watching this video, then you're in a good position to take advantage of like moving in early, because this is very clearly about the last time you'll get into like a bull run before it really starts going. So I think the order has changed. Stuff is faster. That's good news if you're here right now. That's really good news.
Ram, over to you.
Yeah, look, psychology drives markets. And psychology is infectious, and crypto investors have swagger in their step. They're feeling proud. I went to the gym yesterday with like a crypto shirt on and my HODL hat on the other day. I'm not even thinking about that. And other people are going to start seeing those all-time highs. It's going to start hitting major media. And then the FOMO effect starts to kick in. But what's also here this time is we have legitimate technical innovation that we haven't had before. Across the board. And we didn't talk about gaming and Solana. There's a lot happening across all the chains. Eigenlayer, obviously Ethereum. So yeah, there's more to come, right? Psychology, you know, we're all mimetic creatures. You know, it's exciting. We have legitimation from BlackRock. It's finding a home in portfolios. So yeah, I'm constructive.
Hey, Rob, talking of psychology, did you wear your HODL hat to the gym in November of 22?
You know, I had that. I think I was given that HODL hat in the bear market. So I did not wear that into the but I did have my Twitter handle say crypto CFA though in that Q1 of last year. So that's my
fault. And we have no fair weather fans here today. Guys, what a fantastic conversation. Great pairing. It feels like it's like the Crypto All In podcast, man. What a great panel.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thank you all.
Andrew, Rob, Sebastian, thanks so much for joining us. That's it for now on this historic day. Join us for the daily briefing at 4 p.m. Eastern time to hear from Rao Powell as Bitcoin hits a record high. I'll be back on Friday for an interview with Charles Hoskinson, co-founder of Cardano. That's one you're not going to want to miss. 12 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, only for Real Vision Pro crypto members. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. See you all soon. Have a great day, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.